You could spend hours every day trying to keep up with the latest vulnerabilities, exploits, security news, and research. Or you can tune into Paul Security Weekly, where Paul Asadorian and his illustrious cast of hosts not only entertain, but cover all the latest security news and information. Each week, Paul and crew perform interviews with the industry's finest, offer both technical and non-technical advice, and cover the breaking security news. Subscribe today at securityweekly.com/subscribe, then grab a cocktail and hack naked. Hacking naked is optional, but recommended.
Tenable Network Security, creators of Nessus, the world's best vulnerability scanner. Jumpstart your security program today and evaluate Security Center CV, the continuous monitoring solution. For more information, visit them on the web at tenable.com. ProXPN is the leading VPN service offering free accounts, excellent premium features, and an outstanding commitment to privacy and security online. Use the discount code WEEKLY and save 50% off for life. NetSparker, the developers of desktop and cloud-based web application security scanners that enable you to automatically identify vulnerabilities in your web applications and web services. NetSparker scanners employ a unique and dead-accurate vulnerability scanning engine that automatically verifies vulnerabilities with a proof of concept. For more information, visit them on the web at netsparker.com or email them at contact@netsparker.com. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is the security news for this week. I wanted to start off with something really funny. The ponies have been awarded. I know, did anyone go to the pony awards at Black Hat?
No.
Were you a Black Hat?
Yeah, I was, but I didn't.
I didn't attend the pony awards either, but there are a lot of great kind of recap of the year, but a very much humorous approach to it. The best song this year is completely epic. If I play it on the show, YouTube's probably going to flag our video for the song because it's like a spoof of another song.
Oh.
But it's actually someone you might recognize who's been on the show before. Katie Mazuris.
Oh, yes.
Is,
Katie.
Katie's awesome.
At KiwiCon. And
she wrote a song?
She performed. That's her performing. That's her on that like spinny circle thing.
Wow.
That's actually her performing this song. It's like a spoof.
The link is
in the show notes to the video. Mm-hmm. I strongly encourage everyone to watch it because it's
so
epic.
Last time we got into this kind of trouble with YouTube, remember that email I got, Paul, where they are recommending other sites to visit?
Yes.
Yeah, associated with Security Weekly. There were some very interesting sites.
I bet. I think the search on our website, the internal search thing is broken, but I think it just returns no results found. But I was searching securityweekly.com for maturity because I was looking for the vulnerability maturity model that we covered to send to someone.
Right.
And I searched the site for maturity, and it said no results found.
Oh.
Which I thought was classic.
Immature.
You just have to put hack naked and security.
That's
immaturity,
right.
Sorry.
That's right.
And then you'll get some things that you will never want to see again.
Absolutely. Where do we want to start this week? There's just so much.
And you know what? I was sitting down this morning. I'm like, man, there's like no news. And then bam. I'm like, fuck.
Unbelievable amount of news we have to cover this week.
Apple starts a bug bounty program.
Apple starts a bug bounty program is a great place to start.
But it's invite only.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
I didn't know that.
You mean they're not going like bug crowd or,
nope.
or those?
Well, I found a bug already then.
What's that?
So, S-MIME bug, right? On their iPhone. It's not a bug bounty worth thing, but it's annoying. So, when you up your key or you redo your S-MIME key, it does not like address that. It like tries to send to the old key, right?
Hmm. Interesting.
And so you have to literally go in and find an old email, uninstall it. Now, the ironic part is there's like tons of people have been asking to fix this.
Yeah.
I just find it funny that they've been prioritizing security, both against the FBI or whoever.
But
when it comes down to the actual encryption that people are using, no one's actually like, you know, we'll get to that bug.
They give you $25,000 for ways around Apple's digital compartments into its customer data, $50,000 for bugs that give hackers away into iCloud data, and
200,000 to turn over critical vulnerabilities in Apple firmware.
You're going
to
get broke real quick.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. So the problem is you have to be in the invite-only program, and you already sort of, they've reached out to a bunch of folks, and you have to approve.
Oh,
that
you mean it's like a vetted group of already selected people?
Yes.
So it's like, it's the political club.
It's like all the pwn-to-own winners, and that's it.
But that's not really fair, like, no. Right? It's not, because like the firmware ones are going to be like, you know what's worth more than 200,000? Be able to jailbreak this phone.
It's one of those kind of things. It's like Apple did this great thing for security, but they're just so close and not quite.
Yeah, so what are they going to do? Invite the jailbreaker so that rather than letting people jailbreak, they're like, you know what? I think I'm going
to We're just going to pay you off to keep it quiet.
I'm going to take the 200K, I'm going to report it to Apple, and they can fix it whatever they want.
So what you should do is just say, I'd like a $200,000 a year, or where, however often you update your firmware.
Right.
I'd like a $200,000 a year salary every year. That's all they do. Find them all and just pay them a
$200,000. Well, then you have to show up to work. I mean, if you just like.
No. You know they're going to break it. Just go, hey, I won't say anything this time. Move on.
Queue up a whole, bunch as much
touch
as
money.
Then, so it's kind of interesting. How I want to ask you this, Lance. How many 0 days do you think Uncle Sam is sitting on?
All of them.
All of the 0 days. Let's see.
Researcher tried to put a number on that. Healy acknowledged that they'd probably never know the true number of 0 days hoarded by all the government agencies, which thanks Captain Obvious for that. The article didn't really get into how he was counted. They did some economic analysis about how much money was budgeted here and there.
So here's the thing, which is funny about these things, is that each government has separate, like they're siloed and they have their own budgets. And if you sell one to the NSA, you might also sell it to the same, to the FBI or whoever, right? Like I'm just giving, things.
Sure.
So but they, you can actually overlap and sell it twice in through that, but it's still considered an exclusive, depending on the agency, right? So it's really interesting on what do they define as how many have been sold versus how many exploits that are unique, right?
And my whole thing, too, is
plus, you got to remember, the NSA has a C&E program. They're developing their own, too.
Absolutely.
Right?
They are.
So, yeah.
But like, who cares how many? I mean, the number.
Let's assume they have weapons.
Yeah. The number is irrelevant if you've
digital
got
armaments.
But here's the thing. If you've got one really good one for Microsoft Windows, you're in good shape, right?
Right?
You can
get
into a lot of countries that would be interesting for us to penetrate into.
By the way, did you ever
think one or two?
Did you guys ever think about that though? So the you guys would know the ITAR, right? The whole ITAR. So ITAR is basically if you are weaponizing, packets and stuff and exploits. Some of the stuff you have to ITAR register. ITAR is a government thing that allows you to say you can't sell it to XYZ. Kind of like crypto regulations and a few other things.
Right.
Iran is on that list, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Stuxnet for a second. Mm-hmm. So Windows doesn't sell to Iran, yet the subterfuge was written running Windows machines. Yeah. And, of course, this technique that we talk about exploitation, they don't need 0 days because they don't allow them to update. Because if Microsoft gets those IPs from Iran, they don't have the update protection, right? They'd have to literally start their own Microsoft and have to funnel those updates into that one and then there. Because you've got to remember, Microsoft's going to block the Iran IPs. They're going to log them, report them to the government. Well, I'm making a hypothetical, but I'm assuming they probably are going to report them to the government.
They just need MSO 8067.
Correct. Right, but what I'm getting at is you don't even need 0 days for the countries we sanction, right? Because North Korea can't run Windows.
So
like another thing, we speak of that, the Sony attacks. They talk about why was it South Korean language. Well, North Korea, there's no locale for it in Windows because, right? It's China. It's what they would use. There's these little interesting things about the sanctioning itself reduces the amount of 0 days you might need in the government for certain countries of interest to us.
Right.
So how many do we actually need versus and where are they? The bigger, better question is not sitting on, but where are they pointing to?
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
I completely agree.
And there's a tangential issue there, which I don't necessarily want to get into right now. But the exhaustion of just stating it quickly, the exhaustion of IPv4 and the tertiary market of reselling V4 on networks is basically screwing everything in terms of the geolocation. So on IP,
there was a flaw in Samsung Pay. Go figure, that let hackers wirelessly skim credit cards. Now, no details are released. Someone is claiming to do this. But the interesting part of this story is not the fact that some payment system that's on your phone is vulnerable. Us in the community, we kind of imagine that there's payments involved, and it's on a phone, and this one is on Android phones, there's going to be a vulnerability.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong with that combination?
What could go wrong?
The WTF moment is Samsung's response, who says, even though there's a video on YouTube that shows the person doing it, now it may or may not be true, I'll give you that, but Samsung says, Samsung Pay is built with the most advanced security features, assuring all payment credentials are encrypted and kept safe, coupled with the Samsung Knox security platform.
If you use it.
They have not fixed the vulnerability or acknowledged that the vulnerability exists.
Oh my.
Now, again, there's just a random YouTube video from a researcher that says that.
Right. So what it is, it comes out, and when it comes to intelligence, they haven't verified or gotten confidence in it yet. So,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it does show the person skimming Samsung Pay and replaying the credentials. The token reuse issue.
You mean a session fixation issue?
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. Yeah. Details are kind of light in the article, but yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But so, you know, they can still say it was encrypted and everything, but it doesn't mean it didn't stop a replay attack.
Yeah, exactly.
So, exactly. We use encryption. We just didn't put authentication.
We use encryption.
On it. We didn't use HMAC. Dang it.
I just don't.
We use encryption. Web's encryption, right?
Right.
I just don't use
SSL.
Like, my level of trust for Samsung when it comes to security vulnerabilities, the fact they make TVs that allow people to spy on you, and they make those refrigerators which have to be vulnerable to something. Like, I just know.
And you have smart things in your house?
And I have smart things in my house. I do.
You know, the more smarter they become, the less we smart we are because we keep owning them.
Yeah.
So.
And I have the locks and thermostats, probably several of which were hacked at this year's DEF CON.
You know what? Paul, it doesn't have to be just about smart locks, by the way. I went through an exercise recently, which probably would be no surprise to those who pick locks, and I do occasionally pick locks, where I changed out the locks on the house. You know why? Because I took one of the locks, picked it in no less than 15 seconds, and I'm like, holy shit, this thing is like a 25-year-old lock. It's got to be updated. And I was actually gratified to find out that a modern lock manufactured from a Quickset or a Slade or whatever your vendor of choice is actually is a lot more resistant to picking. I bought two locks, one for the house, one for the lock picking gear, and I had a very, very hard time picking the newer one versus the older one.
The way to decide if it's resistant is when their hand gets tired. If you can get it to their hands getting tired
exactly.
when they're picking, you know, you win this war, right? It's a war of attrition when it comes to lock picking, you know?
I totally thought he was talking about masturbation.
So speaking about keys.
Depends on what lock. No.
Yeah, speaking about keys, your story number 13 and one that I also had, well, that Microsoft proves backdoor keys are a terrible idea.
Yeah, so this really means that on devices that you do not allow or allow you to disable the secure boot, such as the ARM-based and Windows RT tablets, the key has been leaked, essentially allowing you to run Linux or Android on these devices.
Well, that's just the old DRM thing, right?
I think that's freaking sweet, to be honest with you. Yeah. But I don't know if it has other repercussions to enterprise security or not.
So here's the thing.
So what else can Secure Boot run on? Will Secure Boot work on a PC?
Yeah.
So if I can unlock Secure Boot, what do I get access to on a regular PC?
Yeah, you get access to the PC.
Yeah.
That requires physical access.
But if I have physical access, it's intended to be restricted
secure,
for me
right.
to do. Right.
So why do they keep using symmetric keys to solve this problem then, right? So for instance,
FBI.
We have key rings, right? They can be public. Microsoft can add themselves to the key ring for their needs, right? There is no leak other than someone stealing that person's key ring from the secret side of it. But, I mean, there you can even have a passphrase to that. So go ahead and steal that, right?
I mean, it blows my mind. Why do people keep implementing crypto
incorrectly
is really
well. It's because people do not understand. It is an esoteric. So crypto. It was funny. I had an interview podcast for the 10th anniversary of I2P, and the question on them from the I2P guys. So how'd you go from crypto to InfoSec? And I'm like, I thought they were all related, right? So in their world, crypto is separate. InfoSec is separate, right? Mm-hmm. So it is really interesting to see that because in my world, I was like, I thought crypto. Like that's why I got into crypto. Is I thought that was what we're safeguarding stuff, right? So that's why So it's I think it's. Just a matter of opinion.
I busted an application this year, I think, was a zero day because they were using a static a static key in the source code.
Well, we do that all the time with malware, right? So ransomware is the only thing that's changed there, and that was why ransomware is scary now, is the dual key. The cool thing, though, is I'm seeing a lot of the cheaper ones are using 768-bit, so if anybody knows, has a number field sieve.
Blowing my mind, Lance, is that there are published key exchange algorithms, published standards.
I know. I saw that today, actually. I was looking at some homegrown guide. No, this was a this was a tool that was out there, written by some guy, literally compiled 2 days ago, and it went all the way up to 16,000, whatever the, is it 386 or something, you know, the 4x of basically 4,096 or whatever, of RSA, and let's try that. And I was testing how long it would take. I'm like, wow, this is going to take about 25 minutes to generate this key, right? So, no, literally, it was like, generate the key. And then it's like, so it was really funny because then their opinion of why they wrote it is they felt 2048-bit was weak. And I guess they're thinking threat model is government or anti-government, right? But I'm like, you know, no one, 16,000 is overkill and very expensive on your computer. And, like, no one really understands the actual crypto itself.
And why aren't they using Elliptic Curve, for that matter?
That's where I'm at with it. It was like, look, let's talk web apps, right? You know, people talk about like the transparent databases, you know, like where they're like, oh, we should secure the data at rest in the data. And then people write like symmetric key web apps that like literally, I'm like, if you hack the web, you get in anyways. It doesn't really matter, right? You got the login. It's the same thing. There was no point encrypting. Mm-hmm. So what it really comes down to is that's like, you know, we talk about two-factor and people have that. But what you could do is it also could be my key ring is on that data. Mm-hmm. Your key ring is on that. We upload that. We share that in there. And those in the data at rest is encrypted. And it's like it's a pseudo. Like I want to access that piece of data. I can put in my passphrase or I can, you know, shake in. And I don't understand why people haven't figured out there is. You know how long Elliptic and like normal, it's been around since the 70s when it comes down to the numbers.
Elliptic Curve basically mathematically, just for the listeners, mathematically reduces the exponentiation problem down to an additive problem, which basically means it is a boon for efficiency. I mean, if you go back to the RSA problems with key exchange, you're using exponentiation, which is very expensive to process. And Elliptic Curve effectively solves that problem. Mm-hmm. And for particularly for mobile devices, it's a battery saver. Yep. I mean, if nothing else.
Yeah, instead of a field, it's a curve, which is great. It's hugely different. It's linear versus
it's linear versus exponential.
Yep.
Which is a massive, massive savings. And yet, you look at OpenSSL, you look at these different things. Everybody's, you know, the different web servers. Just for one example, everybody's still defaulting to the older key exchange algorithms using RSA and stuff. And this doesn't mean it's not strong. It means it's just not efficient.
Right. Yeah, when you think scale, like when we think about Signal and Telegram and all these things, all the group messaging, they're having trouble scaling it. That's why I can't wait for both homomorphic and multi-party crypto, right? Like, have it, especially if you use ECDH, if the group is small enough. But, you know, when you're doing texting of your friends at Black Hat, it's not like a group of 300 people. It's like you probably set up like, 10, 15 people on your list. And with ECDH, you can do that fairly well with the ARM processors and stuff like this. So, you know, and then when homomorphic actually gets like scalable, I mean, its biggest issue is big O, right? Like if the data size is unpredictable, it can get, you know, heavy.
So it comes down to this, though. The practical application, the practical implementation of many of these things are still using legacy technology.
Yeah.
And that has been effectively the thing that's been driving the information security industry.
Well, people don't like change, psychologically or technologically.
Speaking of which, Volkswagen, did you see this one today?
Nope, sorry.
I saw also a lot of car hacking that happened.
This is only going to fuel your soapbox. Volkswagen, in their remote keyless entry systems, it was found that for all the remote keyless entry systems, for 100 million Volkswagen cars, basically everyone sold since 1995 that has remote keyless entry, plus all of the parts that are shared from the VW stuff to other manufacturers have been found to use a total of, count them, 4 static crypto keys.
So what's that song from Total Recall? Hold on.
Recall.
Right? What was that?
Well, in the backs of my article that came from IO Active, it basically said half of all cars that are on the road connected cars can be hacked.
That's an interesting thing, though. So, like, I have the debate, right? So we saw Charlie Miller and them, like, stop the guy's car in the middle of the traffic, which some people agreed and disagreed that was a good idea. Poor journalist.
I think that won the Pony Award for best stunt hack.
So we can hack everything. Everybody knows this, right? You go to Black Hat, you realize this.
Can bus hack everything?
You can bus hack everything.
Right. Whether you do it or not.
Yeah, bus hack. So, yeah, I love that. It's a car, but we hacked the bus.
Right.
It's the S to a C, and it's can butt.
Yeah. So, but my point is like no one's like really sitting. Everybody keeps doing the stunt work again, right? And this is me on another soapbox. But what as an industry, we talk about interpersonal. We keep yelling at people. We're really loud. Hey, you broke this. You're stupid. Da 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 da. We've been doing this for years. But it was back when no one was listening. Now everybody's, look at the news. Like you have stuff to talk about that people care about every single day now, right?
Yeah, so when people are listening.
Yeah, people are listening. When are we going to be responsible? So do we keep continuing going? Hey, your cars are vulnerable, or do we come out with something that says, here's a standard that we recommend? Because I think we got the point now. Matt, now let's start solving some problems. And I think that's a big problem.
What we need is somebody to step up and be the Neil deGrasse Tyson of information security.
Well,
that's what we need.
Yes. Actually, I did say this. I said we do lack leadership as a security community, right? We do a lot of yelling. We're very loud.
I nominate Dave Kennedy. Dave, you listening?
Maybe it could be gay, Dave. I think it's something who has to be, someone that has to be well-tempered with media, though. Like, meaning it's more of a responsibility, not just, hey, I got media. No offense against Dave. I love Dave, but I know he also likes and enjoys it, so,
Look, it's not an easy job, and most of us, let's face it, most of us in the industry have very strong opinions.
Right.
And for you to be a media spokesman,
it's a
okay
hard
to have strong opinions, but you have to be able to temper it and deliver it in the right
way. Well, it's like you can't have a... I'm going to joke here, but you can't have a Trump-like person going out and talking, spewing the InfoSec stuff. Like, that literally does remind us of everybody going, hey, you're stupid, you're doing this wrong, but then there's no solution,
What do you think of the I Am the Cavalry movement, who's, from what I've heard, made a lot of strides in healthcare and in the automotive, or trying to make strides in the automotive industry?
Who is this, sorry?
I Am the Cavalry movement.
Oh, that's a start, right? Like, I mean, that's a thing. But unfortunately, it always starts in movements. And then the thing that's scary about movements is we're fickle. Mm-hmm. We forget fast. Mm-hmm. And so how do you keep a movement?
Movements are subject to friction, and friction slows you down.
Yeah, and then when people want to do it to start a movement, they want to get a working group and another committee and this and that. I mean, I literally have been like, I don't know how many, it's like there's a working group on mobile defense, and there's a working group on this. And it's great that we want to do it, but everybody's got their coming in their agendas, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, we're actually also asking and looking for a unicorn, so I can't really talk, right? Like, I want to solve these problems, but we're looking for a unicorn to save us, right?
I mean, I know what the challenge is, and you guys can all relate to this. It's not that intellectually interesting. Most of the reason that I believe that a lot of us geeky nerds are interested in this topic is because it's intellectually stimulating and very interesting.
Right.
Standing in front of a camera and being the Neil deGrasse Tyson, for lack of better words.
Yeah, he's probably bored out of his mind, honestly.
Yeah, it's probably not that interesting, right?
Right.
Now, I will give a plug straight up for Paul, and that I think Enterprise Security Weekly is starting down this path.
Right.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And starting down in a really good way, because it's talking to an executive or starting to talk to an executive audience, which is one thing. But we're talking about getting beyond the executive audience and talking to the general public.
Also,
that's
getting
a whole nother level.
Getting people to also break bread together. So your executives don't talk well to nerds,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, nerds. I keep talking about
nerds. Oh, where is Santa?
But that's how they see us. You know how many people come up to me when they want me to fix their email and they were an executive? And I'm an executive now, but like I hated this. And it felt like it almost felt like digital racism. I don't know how to explain it. But I would go, hey, I need some help with my email. You're not going to hack my computer, are you? Fuck you. Okay? No. I don't care. Okay? And it's insulting.
Actually, I'd come back with a, do you want me to?
Well, no, but it did get insulting after a while, right? It's like, come on, dude. Like, that's, park my car. You're not going to steal my car, are you? Right? Mm-hmm. What you're doing, the same thing.
Well, and I think we feed into that by running around conferences in workplaces wearing black t-shirts with white text that says, I read your email.
Yeah, I mean, there is a culture.
That'd be like the valets walking around with t-shirts like going, I steal your car.
Right. No, and that is true. And I'm not saying let's get rid of the culture.
No. And I agree.
The valet's wearing t-shirts that say, I rifle through your glove box.
Yeah. Right. But, but my point is, even with those shirts, like that shirt right there should make me come up to you if I don't know and ask you, what does that mean? Right? Like, hey, you talk to me about that a little bit more.
Well,
right?
In that sense, it's a good thing, too. Both I Read Your Email and I Hack Charities are helping raise awareness
correct
as well. And I do agree, it's a very integral part of the culture.
Good, I've had some very, very grocery store conversations.
Same here.
By wearing this T-shirt. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
I've got
the very extraordinarily offended, you know, general public member go, what are you wearing that for?
Less or worse when you wear a Hack Naked T-shirt?
I think it's less.
I love
the Hack
idea, though. The Neil deGrasse Tyson of InfoSec. I'm not going to ever forget that. That's a really good way of putting
it. So I read a really bad article about how nobody knows what cyber attacks really cost. And after I read the article, I still don't know how much cyber attacks really cost. And I don't know how to measure.
So the article was effective.
I don't know how to measure how much they cost.
It got the point. You don't know.
Somebody put a metric out, right? Isn't it like $200,000 per data record or something?
No.
I've heard it. It really depends on the company. I've met, let's just call them a transportation company. When they got DDoSed for an hour, it cost them $45 million. But they measured it, right? Now, this is a big, 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 big company, right? You know,
or kind of like what happens when Delta's computers are down for a day.
Right. Correct. It's actually in that realm of type of company, right? And so when it comes down to it, them being down is disaster recovery time. It's like it is a disaster. It is a highly cost,
but that's,
you know.
That's measuring how much downtime.
But no, but that, how much did they lose out on that, right? You know, because transportation, it's all about delivery time. It's about when you get there. It's about delays. It's about, I mean, if you set, like, you take a Delta, did you say Delta, right?
Delta,
so if you take them and you throw them down for a whole day behind flights and stuff.
Right. But if someone you know? But if someone breaks into Delta and they still run and they just steal people's information, how much does that cost? I think that's the harder question.
For breaches specifically?
Yeah, for breaches. Yeah.
That one's hard because half the time you didn't even know you lost your data, and it depends on who stole it, right? For instance, if it's OPM-style stealing, that data's not going to matter to you. Oh, good example, though. Health companies. Mm-hmm. Health companies is a big deal right now, right? Now, it's not a big deal in the market, so I deal with, obviously, the deep and dark web and everything. And we, it's not health, unless it's targeted, health data is not that crucial to bad guys.
Yeah.
Right.
What it's crucial to is holding it for ransom for the companies that it was stolen from. Mm-hmm. So it's figuring out how to utilize that data.
We're going
to
sell you your own data back.
We're going to sell you your own data back because we know that you will go out of business if you don't have this data and you'll get in trouble.
Right.
And so they've figured out how to squeeze this, again, another coercion technique, but that is an interesting thing because how much would they cost?
You could also bribe them and insist on cash and then burn it in front of them to make a point.
It's not about the money. It's about sending a message, right? You know, so
that was a reference. Those that have seen the reference
the
will recognize the reference.
1.9, right?
Yes.
Yes. But yeah, no, that's true. But health is seeing that where you might be able to get a number from it depending on how much they have, right, or are concerned with.
It's going to depend on the consumer awareness largely to the impact of breach. I mean, as soon as real big lawsuits come out, class action from consumers back on these companies, and it's going to cost
money. That with banks, right? We saw that with banks. Yeah. We saw that with like that. And it's interesting because, it depends on your breach. I've seen things where people are trying to say, we're suing XYZ because an advanced persistent threat came through. Well, if a nation state or a government came through and our own government can't defend against it, I don't see that as a good case, right? It's a hard case to win, and you won't come up with the numbers. But if it is something like, I lost this and the bank could have done XYZ about it and everything, and it all comes down to standard of care, what they call the UCC 4A, which is, it's not the it's a... good faith law, basically. Like, hey, did they act in good faith?
Yep.
Did they do the industry standards? So in the bank side, you cite the FFIEC and say, did they follow these rules and do their best foot forward, basically, to safeguard? Or are they following, basically, today's standards in industry? The problem with that, though, is what's today's standard in industry when you do have APTs, like, breaking the barriers for us, right?
Well, and there's a spinoff for the pen testing industry, too, because we get potentially hurt if, you know, the human kicks the dog, kicks the cat, you know, kind of chain effect. Like, well, we had a pen test with you guys, and we still got breached, you know, WTF over.
That comes up, yeah.
Right. Well, you had the pen test a month ago. The landscape changed in a month.
Did you click on a phishing email?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why. Right. Got it.
Right. Well, I mean, also,
there is that business, the time versus money issue that's in the pen testing industry of, like, you know, you will not find all the vulnerabilities.
No, they want something done in 3 weeks, and pentests can't be done in 3 weeks.
I had an article about they named it Project Sauron malware. Yeah. It was hidden for 5 years.
Yep.
They're claiming it's
full framework. Full framework.
They're
yeah.
claiming it's state sponsored. Yep. I don't think they have any true evidence other than it was very stealthy
and that it was made with Lua, and the architecture behind it seemed like it was a team of people. It's do you remember
Flame? I wanted
Flame?
To ask you, but this is your area, right?
So, do you remember Flame? And after Stuxnet, Flame was a frame kit, like a James Bond Swiss Army knife. So when you see stuff like Lua and you see actual modular architecture and modular programming, you end up usually guessing that that has been thought out by a CNE team, a CNO team, right? So that's why that is being made right now. I mean, you know, there's no, again, it's Stuxnet. You know, you can't really prove it. That's the cool thing about like going against state sponsored too. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the sophistication and the organization it required and the time it took, if 5 years? 5 years? Really? 5 years?
To lay like, 5 years under the radar.
Why do you want things to lay 5 years under the radar if it's not espionage?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So
if you're an attacker, you're going to profit on that.
Right. There are two types of attacker. You have what they call APT. A is just recon, but organized persistent threat is what I call it usually. Mm-hmm. Or you have an opportunistic persistent threat. And those two big ones are, it's literally different motivators. A 5 year sitting there is a motivator to
spy,
right? And it's in the toolkits and everything like that. The Lua stuff is usually it's a common language, obviously, but at the same time, that modular architecture and that design usually shows object-oriented, thought-out, professional teams of people that have been like actually.
Well,
that's
some things they said about
Stuxnet
too. Very few or none, they claim, but I'm sure there's very few errors in the code, is what they said too.
Right, it's about that because you know how meticulous you have to be to stay 5 years and not do anything. Yep. I mean, that's a mission, right? That's going to space and staying out there for 5 years, right? Like that's a freaking mission, right?
Yep. So. Now, I will say the person that said that it was characteristic of state-sponsored style malware was Graham Cluley.
Mm.
So there's a little bit of credibility behind that.
Yep, yep, so.
Well, it's also
and he's probably not telling us everything too because it is state sponsored, style. So
But just chaining on that, and I don't know, just for Larry, a bit of a question for Larry, how much End Guardians does red teaming activities? But I'm a big fan of longer term pen tests,
or
what we would call red teaming activities. To kind of push back on that, like to say, hey, if you give us time and money, we will find interesting angles in your environment, but you've got to give us that time and money.
Yeah. Exactly. And, it's funny, this whole red teaming thing that's become the new sexy, actually, In Guardian sort of coined a phrase to define that many years ago, and we called it no-holds-barred pen testing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Actually, it's interesting. We had some instincts. So when you see red teaming to the other side of it, of the intelligence stuff, a lot of the times the intelligence pickup side is, it's not the InfoSec teams that are picking it up. It's some of the cyber intelligence groups that are picking up the red team because they didn't know about the red team. Mm-hmm. But we've actually had that even for our clients. We're like, actually, that's a red team going on. Here's the pen tester, and we track it down and stuff because they didn't know, we didn't know, everybody know, but they're reacting on a thing. And so it's interesting because you are seeing malware written on the red team level. That it's not 5 year like living, but it is some of it sophisticated.
Well, it gives me some faith. I mean, John Strom was commenting on Enterprise Security Week earlier today and said, a lot of the solutions that we look to from vendors today in the security space can do a really good job, some cases, or maybe not a good job, but they can find pen testers. But can they find the stuff that you're looking at?
Right.
Right. But it's interesting that you can also find
who they are,
the penetration testers.
Yeah. We needed to confirm it. We thought it was funny.
No, I think that's an interesting segue to that too, and that is if you have defined a profile on a pattern for a red team, you could actually be in a sort of postmortem analysis perspective, really informative to that red team, saying, hey, you guys stuck out like a sore thumb, and this is why.
Right, Yeah, we literally went down to, here's the LinkedIn of the guy who specifically wrote this exploit here for this.
And that would, that feedback loop would be very useful, cause the red team to reevaluate and...
Correct. And that's what they do. And some don't get commonly that issue, but it did come up, and we were like, on our side, we were like, yeah, we got that, right? But at the same time, it was news to them who was reporting it, and then I'm sure it came back to the. By the way, here's what we saw, right? And so it's becoming red team, blue team, right? Mm. Right. So it's it would be impressive to see the blue team really, you know, whip some butt back at it, right? Like, that's the idea. Because the red team's idea is to see the success of a blue team. We know people are going to get in. Come on. We know that someone's going to click on that link, right? Come on. I mean, we know this,
it's
right?
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So it's attack surface reduction, right? So did we close that attack surface, or did we isolate so that you can't get beyond that?
Well, exactly. You know? Did they shorten the dwell time when you got that seizure channel?
Right. And is there SOC ready? Is there intelligence ready? Is there business continuity teams ready? Are there? It's a tabletop exercise these days against a real scenario, right? So,
Larry, you had some news from DEF CON that I want to hear about. I want to hear about the badge hacking. I want to hear about the wireless network because you were at DEF CON. I don't know if any of us here were you at DEF CON?
Oh, yeah.
I was not. I don't think Joff was either. So,
no, I couldn't get out.
So, I just was reading about it.
So there was a Register article about the Black Hat and DEF CON wireless, and they sort of melded the two together. And Grifter is one of the guys that does the network. And they made some comments that were kind of like BS about running DriftNet and all this type of stuff. Mm. And the DEF CON NOC folks are like, no, we don't do that. We have a secure network if you want it, or a relatively secure network if you want it. And if you're dumb enough to use the open wireless network, you get what you deserve. Right?
And trust me, it was being mucked with.
Yeah. We provide, and they're like, yeah, no, we don't do anything with this. We don't man in the middle stuff, but we provide a feed to like the Wall of Sheep folks. Mm-hmm. Just because it's an open wireless network and they could get it anywhere. So we're just, it's the whole red team white card event type. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and so it was very much some clarity on that.
Wall of Sheep always gets crap.
Yep. And
I like those guys,
But those guys are awesome. I don't know why they get crap.
So I was in the Packet Capture Village, the Wall of Sheep guys, and I was very surprised. It was Saturday that I was there, Saturday morning. And no, it was Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. So we've been well into DEF CON at that point, and there were only 5 entries on the wall sheet. Hmm. But while I was standing there for the half an hour, 2 of them popped up. Mm-hmm. So it was
Someday, if we ever hit that day where Wall of Sheep can't, you know, it's just blank all day.
Yeah.
Right? Well, right?
Maybe we've won.
Either someone's DOSing it or people are actually paying attention to what we say.
Right.
Yep. And some very interesting stuff that was up there.
Right, well, I mean, too, you got to remember HTTPS is finally a big thing. It's a norm, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes you feel a little bit better. I mean, if someone's actively man in the middle, it's a big issue. But, like, you know, in general, like, that's a step in the right direction. We're finally seeing that. Yep. So,
The badge.
The badge stuff. So, I mean, it's not Lost Boy Challenge. It's not Mystery Box Challenge. But Lost Boy did the badges, the electronic badges this year, and included some games, puzzles, and that type of stuff.
That was a really cool badge, actually.
And it was not without their failures in acquisition and so forth.
Yeah, how many people, the big question, you know, every year, how many people attend a DEF CON? There's always some range, different answers. How many badges were printed? Do we know how many badges?
They made 22,000 badges.
Wow. And they run out every year.
And they run out.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
How much do those badges cost at that, you know?
At that, like, quantity, right?
Because I'm trying to figure out, like, it's $240 to get in, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking most of that's probably just paying for the taking badge, right?
So. Actually, you know, if you think about that, you know, the board is probably $10 if we're talking OSH Park.
Right.
And that's a quantity of 3.
Right. So it's at least probably a $40, $50 badge.
Well, and you think about quantity and the Chinese children that are assembling them and all that stuff.
Right.
So. And also remember, it's from China, so you assume that it's got something in it.
Yeah.
Certified pre-owned.
Board by Huawei.
But the cool thing on the badge that I was reading was Konami code, right?
Yeah, that was cool. Yes. And then there's a little bit of, like, there's the you'd have to get it in the light, but there was some secret
with the silk screen.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was multiple puzzles involved in that, which led into multiple puzzles and multiple puzzles. And quite honestly, it was really interesting. Some of the challenges that he comes up with for some of the stuff, and some of it's easy, and some of it's not so easy. Like, to me, this one, this is the signs. Mm-hmm. They put a bunch of glyphs on signs, and I had to spend months looking at just that. What does this mean? But some of the other stuff, you know, looking at some of the way they found that there were stuff that led to YouTube videos for specific dates, which were tied to certain other dates and which songs were released, and then in order to reassemble one thing.
The Reddit thread is all about like what happened on all these different dates.
Yeah.
It's really funny to read.
And then like what songs were released on those dates, and then you turn that out, and then every one of those songs, that, at least in some fashion, every one of those songs that was released on that date was in the movie Grease.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tied to other individual stuff, so that for another phrase, you actually had to go and which order the songs were played in Grease was the order of the phrases that were recovered to sort of do the next password. Like,
someone put a
so
lot
also,
of
you know what they should
it.
Have done is like have that little thing where what's that the connected dot things where you have to climb up
Twister.
Twister. Yeah. Yeah.
So
right.
it's like Inception, going like six or seven levels deep, and it was like, right. oh. And then so then you get that phrase, and then there's another clue that's like you have to remove two of those words, and then that's another clue.
Oh my god! Like,
and then at the bottom of the rabbit hole, you find Kevin Bacon.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty much.
And what's her name? Hold on. I got to get it. Winona Ryder, just because we don't say her name anymore.
Yep. And the best, I think the best one that was, my favorite was Ryan Lostboy trolling everyone before the competition even started. So people would start looking at his website to see what was changed, and he ended up having a script that would change contents of the website at random intervals.
That's awesome.
And provide fake clues, and all of them were end up being red herrings.
And then you had to text someone?
Yep, you ended up having to text someone, and apparently they had the numbers wrong in this case, and they texted a whole bunch of people and called a whole bunch of people in the middle of the night.
So there's actually another party. There was a party my buddy, I was talking about Zach earlier. Hi, Zach. He's probably texting me saying there's a stain on my shirt right now or something, but that they gave out a floppy disk.
And if to
solve it, you have to have a floppy disk reader. So he went to Walmart, grabbed a floppy to USB.
How big was the floppy disk?
It was the high definition 3.5, right? So,
if it was an 8-inch.
Oh, yeah. Good luck, right? Right. If the thing worked once he actually transfers it to you, because you might screw it up and get it right, you know. So he had
the Apple IIe had the 5.25.
Yeah, exactly, right? So, and then you had the Xenix ones right now. So. So he ends up getting this, and then I think someone suggested to him to be like, tweet that you have a floppy reader and get like everybody to like come over and like, you know, use his, and don't even offer a price, to say what will you give me for it, and see what they would offer for it, right? And see where they would go with this, right? And worst case, a beer, right? What's the market bear for this reading of it and stuff? But that was a cool invite as well, like a smart one to do.
So the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, one of the final challenges was the page had the title of ET and would appear to be three sets of numbers. We assumed we would get a phone number because of the hint ET phone home and the fact that there are three number groups, binary to decimal 512, the circumference of 360, and the clock's time is 234. So 512, 360, 0234, and they got it wrong because I'm assuming because 234 they didn't have the zero, so they started calling and texting a bunch of numbers.
Because it's the middle of the night, they haven't slept the whole time, and
they're probably drinking.
This is the number. This is the number everyone texted.
Dude, that is the true definition of drunk dialing. There,
drunk or dialing,
drunk or dialing.
So step number 8, if they get the number. Former apologies to residents of Austin, Texas for our many late night calls and texts during this phase. After several hundred texts, calls, and some technical difficulties were solved, we received this message. Retext tomorrow at 1:57 for the passcode.
Oh.
It was at 4 a.m. at this point.
Brute force.
Yep. So it was
around, which number was it? Was it this number?
0234.
So they were right the entire time.
Yep.
But because of the delay, they didn't. Oh, wow.
So I wonder what happens if you text the number now.
Not everybody reaches to the phone.
Everybody. All the listeners.
All the listeners. See what happens and let us know.
We just started. Oh, no, wait. A lot of listeners will listen while they're jogging.
512-360-0234.
So that happens to be an area code for Austin, Texas, which, bummer.
We're running a little short here on time, so.
And
that's that looks like the same one in the.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So you do get the same thing in the challenge. So
yep.
Okay, it's probably
one
epic badge challenge.
I wonder if they're using a Twilio or like a asterisk box or something.
Yeah.
But like Paul was saying, we probably should close it out.
Yep.
Yeah. So I want to thank everyone for listening. Thanks to Lance James for coming on
thank
the
you.
Show this awesome. Evening, being in Studio wonderful to have you, Lance. Thank you for all of your contributions and insight on this show. All right, Job, thanks as always. We'll see everyone next week on Security Weekly. Larry, take us out.
Over.
Man, why am I so sticky?
Out!
Hey, guys, there's the title of this episode, Why Am I So Sticky?
There it is.
There it is.